federal government has taken over. You know, there was one time I threw out the term, there's been a CIA coup. It's a secret government. We don't know what they do. The Congress doesn't know what they do. They rig elections, they start wars, and they have a lot of power. And even now, 70-80% of the American people believe that possibly, you know, the CIA was involved in the murder of Kennedy.
Buckle your seatbelt. It's time for another episode of the Prepper Recon Podcast.
Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, water filters, bug-out bags, and first aid kits. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON for 5% off your entire order at CampingSurvival.com.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
Today's guest is John Rubino of DollarCollapse.com. In his book, The Collapse of the Dollar and How to Profit from It, John predicted the 08 housing bubble and the subsequent bull market in the metals, which took gold from 800 in 2008 to its high of 1900 in 2011. John, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Mark. Good to be back.
Absolutely. Now, David Stockman was out yesterday, and he was, of course, Reagan's financial guy. And he says the bull market, the stock market, everything, it's over with. And there's lots of confusion in the markets right now. The Dow's dropped about 4.5% in the last 3 weeks. Is this a healthy pullback, or is this a harbinger of things to come?
Well, the financial markets are so hard to predict now because fundamentals don't matter like they used to, with the government intervening at every level of the financial system. You know, the government's buying bonds and pushing interest rates down to unnaturally low levels and in the background intervening in the stock market in various ways. So we can't look at, you know, margin debt or PE ratios and infer anything for the short term like we used to be able to an extent. And so I wouldn't even presume to predict what the stock market is going to do in the next 6 months or a year, just because they're not markets anymore. You know, they're basically just varying levels of manipulation. Having said all that, you know, if you do look at the fundamentals, stocks got way ahead of themselves. Well, all financial asset prices have in the last few years. You know, bonds are in super bubble territory. You know, interest rates have never been this low in the U.S. for this extended a time. Which means that, again, based on history and fundamentals, you would expect the bond market to correct dramatically in the not-too-distant future. And the stock market, meanwhile, is at record levels of margin debt and lots of other measures like corporate profits as a percent of the economy, for instance, which is a pretty good indicator of long cycles. That's at record levels that usually in the past has preceded a serious bear market. So it's very easy to picture a bear market starting now and turning into something really, really nasty over the next couple of years. But again, you got the government doing things that they've never done before. So it's impossible to say that this is it. But when it happens, when it starts, this is how it will look in the early stages. You know, people starting to get nervous and the Dow dropping, I think it's 7 days in a row here, shedding about 1,000 points. And people who are fully invested or, God forbid, are fully invested on margin have got to be sweating right now. And they've got to be thinking about taking money off the table. And so that's when bear markets really get going, when you get this wave of panic selling, because people who have embedded profits don't want to take the chance that they're going to be round tripped and lose this nice gain that they had built in. So they're willing to take a smaller gain in order to get that money away from the risky sector that it's in now. And so, yeah, you know, you could easily see a bear market from here. And then the question becomes, what happens after? You know, how does the government respond to a 17% or 25% drop in the average equities price? You know, they won't let that continue because we're so fragile financially now. We borrowed so much money. We're so over leveraged in almost every aspect of American society that a stock market crash would very easily spread to the rest of the economy. You know, it would mess up the bond market and it would mess up housing and it would lower government revenues and cause deficits to spike and yada yada on and on through the economy. Whereas previous bear markets haven't necessarily been immediate causes of a depression. It could happen this time. So the government won't let it happen, or they'll try to keep it from happening. You know, they will intervene on whatever scale they deem necessary to keep a hiccup in the stock market from turning into the 1930s again. And so they'll come in secretly buying stocks and overtly buying bonds, and they'll lower interest rates even further, and they'll run huge deficits. You know, all the stuff that happened in 2008, 2009 will recur on an even bigger scale. And that's when things get really crazy, because there has to be a limit to how much leverage the government can inject into the financial system before the thing just blows up. And so I thought 2008, 2009 had to be the end of this system, you know, that we'd hit a wall financially and we couldn't take on any more debt. So we would have to go back to living within our means and restructure along sustainable lines. Well, it didn't happen. They were able to blow up another gigantic bubble. And I think this would be the end, but I was wrong about the last one. So there's no way to know whether they actually succeed one more time or when this blows up, it's the end of the current financial system. You know, we're living in unprecedented times, which means we're writing history. And there isn't a lot of precedent. There isn't a lot of history that we can look at and say, oh, well, yeah, when this happened, that happened. So again, we'll see that repeat. Well, we might not, because we've got a lot of different things going on that have never happened before. So fascinating times and incredibly dangerous times for most people.
And rather than the beating around the bush with the plunge protection team and Fed intervention and stuff, China, it seems like they figured it out of how to have a perpetual bubble. You just outlaw selling. And the only thing you can do is buy stocks. And that seems to have put a bottom in the Shanghai Stock Exchange. So maybe that's something that could work for us. Do you think that the fine folks at the Fed and Treasury and plunge protection teams, they can get together and get some walls like that for us?
Well, they'll try some stuff like that, you know. And you would think that would be the end of your interest in buying into a given stock market. When the government outlaws selling during a crisis, why would you ever take a big long position in stocks in that market again? Because you know you'd be trapped in them and they could fall to zero and there's nothing you can do about it. So I view China's actions and a lot of the stuff the U.S. did early on. You know, we banned certain kinds of short selling and imposed other really restrictive market manipulation rules at the time. And I view those things as an admission of weakness. And so as a reason to sell rather than to buy. But a lot of traders especially want to be on the side of the central bank. You know, they want to be riding along with the money printers. And so they, you know, the old saying in the U.S., don't fight the Fed. Well, that's true on an even bigger scale in other parts of the world where they're so much more blatant about their central banks manipulating the markets. So a lot of people, especially a lot of short-term traders, view these actions as buy signals. And eventually they will be wrong. Eventually fundamentals will win out and these really extreme distortions in the markets will come back to bite us. They'll become counterproductive, and at some point they won't work, and then all hell will break loose. Because once people figure out that the government is out of tools, you know, they've tried everything they've got, and things are still going down, and then we'll see this mass exodus from the financial markets and into real stuff. And we can't know the timing, of course, because as I said, these are unprecedented times. It's never happened like this before, so we can't know how it'll progress exactly. But it's a safe bet that eventually, as governments basically distort markets beyond recognition and short-circuit their ability to send price signals to entrepreneurs and show them how to allocate capital, at some point, we don't have capitalism anymore. And so we lose the ability to efficiently allocate capital, which is basically what markets do. And then the system just grinds to a halt. Then we're Eastern Europe, you know? So somewhere along this line, things stop working. And my guess is that it's sooner rather than later, but then I would have told you exactly the same thing in 2007, you know? And so we're a decade beyond that right now. So if we can go a decade beyond what I thought was the limit to leverage that a society can tolerate, who's to say we can't go another decade? So I just don't know. But at some point out there, the system does blow up because we're changing the nature of society from capitalism to some kind of centrally planned system that has always failed historically. There's never been a centrally planned system that actually worked in the long run. They always start out great. You know, the Soviet Union looked like the future in the 1920s, and Japan looked like the future in the 1980s. And now we've got China, which is kind of sort of a centrally planned capitalist economy that for a long time there looked like they had it right, and now they're falling apart. So the U.S. is going that route, you know, where we're edging, and more than edging, you know, we're kind of blundering into a system where the government is allocating capital rather than the markets, and we'll fail just like these other societies have failed. And it's only a question of timing.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks would probably argue that we haven't had capitalism in this country since FDR. So, you know, and then with Corzine and all the stuff that Goldman Sachs did with, you know, taking both sides of the bet and no repercussions for it at all. I don't even know what we call this. It's just it's beyond a Ponzi scheme.
You know, it's Mark, if I could interrupt for one second, crucial for people to understand that capitalism works primarily through failure. You know, you have to have people push the envelope, and the ones who push the envelope too far collapse. And that tells the rest of us what does and doesn't work. And you take that away, and then it's just a free-for-all. And that's what the government has done with the big banks. They basically have said, you know, no matter what you do, we can't let you fail because you're too big. So, yeah, go ahead and, you know, take on $250 billion of derivatives exposure. Just go ahead. Doesn't matter. If they blow up on you, we'll bail you out. And if they don't blow up on you, this year you reap a massive year-end bonus, you know. And so bankers have been immersed in what is called moral hazard, which is a situation where things are set up so that they lead you to do things you wouldn't normally do because you feel like you're protected from the downside of these actions. And a capitalist system can't work for very long under that under those circumstances, because you get people doing crazy stuff and eventually those crazy things blow up, you know, and that's where we are now. That's where we were early in the last decade. Things blew up. Government bailed us all out, and now everybody's doing even crazier things. So a blow-up is coming, and the only question is the next crisis, is, you know, is the next 2008-2009 crisis the end of the road or not? You know, and that's the big question that we'll have to answer at some point.
It's time for a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proved to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on silver and gold.
The jobs numbers just came out, and the folks not in the labor force now just had another all-time high. We're now pushing up close to 94 million. Is that just we've got so much prosperity now that 94 million people in America just absolutely don't even need to think about a job?
Well, you know what a lot of people are doing is they're looking around and finding out that they can't get a job in their field, but they could go to work at McDonald's or they could be a bartender. And they're saying, you know what? I'm going to move to an apartment and just live off my savings or move back in with my family. You know, we'll go back to the old extended family household thing and we'll just get by. You know, I'm not going to take that crappy job. So now we have, as you said, more people out of the workforce than ever in history. More able-bodied people. And this isn't retirees, you know, turning 70 and then just sitting in a rocking chair on their porch. This is 38-year-olds, 52-year-olds, people like that who could be working and should be working but aren't for various reasons. And, you know, if we keep pumping more money into the system and we keep lowering interest rates, there might come a time when job creation picks back up again, but it will be at a cost of so much new debt that it'll be very temporary, you know? And so what we've created in the last few years is sort of a part-time nation where people are working at crappy jobs that aren't their true callings. But the government is counting that as the same thing. You know, they count a bartending job as the same thing as $250,000 a year engineering job at an aerospace company in their statistics. You know, they're both single employed people. And so unemployment goes down as we add more and more really crappy jobs, and the system gets poorer and poorer. You know, we're a poorer country when we replace 1 million manufacturing workers with 1 million waiters and bartenders. And that's what we've been doing. And, you know, an Austrian economist would have looked at what we were up to 20 or 30 years ago and predicted this very outcome. You know, we're allocating capital less and less wisely. We're becoming less and less productive in a lot of ways. Therefore, the quality of the jobs that are available are going downhill at the same time, you know? And so there's no real end to this because we aren't fixing anything. You know, we're just taking on more and more debt. We're making even bigger mistakes along the lines of the mistakes that got us into this trouble in the first place. And so only, as the saying goes, when you find yourself in a hole, the first thing to do is to stop digging. Only when we stop digging will we have a chance to correct this stuff. And since we're not stopping digging, you know, we're continuing to dig that hole ever deeper, the difficulty of getting out of it is growing exponentially now. And I don't think we can get out of it without some kind of a crisis that is just incredibly painful for everybody involved, other than the gold bugs, who will be the people who hold most of the capital in another 10 years.
And then if you're cutting grass in the morning and then bartending at night, that's the equivalent of two aerospace jobs making $250,000 a year, right?
Well, yeah.
According to the BLS?
Yeah, because you have two jobs, you know. So, you know, what is happening is that in a broader sense is the statistics that are coming out of the government are being cheapened in a lot of ways because they define things in ways that the average person might not, but also in ways that the average person doesn't catch. You know, if you just see the headline, unemployment, 5.3%, you think we're in great shape. But if most of the new jobs are jobs that you wouldn't take, you know, you might consider being unemployed rather than taking one of those jobs, then we aren't better off. And that's the society that we're creating. And yeah, so I don't know. It's on the one hand incredibly depressing because we're doing this very obviously and we're not doing anything to stop it. And very exciting, on the other hand, because there are a lot of ways to make huge amounts of money from a system that spins out of control in this way. And, you know, I'm an investment guy, so my main focus is actually the optimistic side of this. I'm looking at it and going, all right, if I short the stock market at this point, how much money would I, you know, how much could I make? And you know, looking back to the 2008 to 2012 era, when if you bet against the system, you know, you shorted the big banks and the housing companies and you went long gold, you made a fortune. You know, there were some in that book, The Big Short, there are the stories of people who made tens or hundreds of millions of dollars or even billions of dollars by betting against the system. And we're coming to that point again. You know, there will be a time, and maybe it's beginning now with the stock market tanking, there will come a time when betting against the powers that be will make you a ton of money. And so I think that's what we should be looking at. We can't fix what's going on. You know, we can protect ourselves and our families by investing correctly and by taking steps as you counsel, you know, to prepare for various kinds of crises. And so we can get ourselves through what's coming, even though we can't know the exact shape of it, and maybe make a lot of money. You know, so we can come out the other end of this in better shape than we went into it. And that should be our goal, not to change the political system, because the institutional momentum is such now that we're heading off that cliff. And it doesn't matter whether it's Barack Obama in charge or Jeb Bush next time around or Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. It doesn't matter. They're going to do more or less the same things. And the system is going to continue to borrow more money and increase the amounts of really crazy leverage out there and encourage people to do things that they wouldn't normally do, except, well, interest rates are negative, therefore they're paying me to borrow money, yada, yada. You know, that's what we're going to do in the next few years, no matter what, unless we break down right away. And we can't stop that as individuals, but we can take steps to protect ourselves and our families very effectively. And that's what we should be looking at, you know, tending our own gardens, both literally and figuratively in a financial sense. And that's an interesting intellectual challenge, and it's exciting because it's an investment play, and also because becoming self-sufficient is just a cool thing to do.
Sure. And you mentioned gold and silver, so let's talk about that for a second. The recent drop in the commodity sector is putting a lot of pressure on the secondary miners, which are companies that mine copper or steel, and then they'll get silver or gold as a byproduct. If they slow down production because of falling prices, do you think that the primaries are going to be able to meet the demand for gold and silver?
Oh, yeah. At the margin, production will go down in the next couple of years. And part of that is, you know, peak gold and peak silver. We've already discovered the easy stuff. And so now the new deposits are harder to get to and higher cost. And in ideal circumstances, we would still be producing a little less gold and silver on average each year over the next few years, or actually over the next few decades. But now, yeah, you've got a lot of big miners who, no matter what they mine, the price of it is going down, and it's leading them to either not expand the way they had planned or to actually scale back production in the moment here. And, you know, if you're a zinc mine and you're making some silver on the side, that silver doesn't get mined and smelted either if you scale back zinc mining. So, yeah, I think that the supply of especially silver and to a lesser extent gold at the margin will be more favorable for buyers than sellers in the next few years. And, you know, gold is abundant in vaults around the world. Pretty much all the gold that's ever been mined is still sitting out there in vaults. Silver is a different story. You know, we use silver and it disappears in a lot of cases. So the above ground available supply of silver seems to be falling a little year after year. Now, so combine falling mine production with falling stockpiles at the same time that investment demand spikes, which it's doing right now. You know, the demand for silver coins is through the roof out there. And that's a recipe for a dramatic price increase. That's what we saw in 2008, 2009. You know, if you wanted to buy silver coins, you had to wait for several weeks. You had to give your money to the bullion dealer and then wait until they could scrounge up enough maple leaves or silver eagles or whatever to send them to you. And that was a very scary thing to do because, you know, in times of turmoil, you see bullion dealers go out of business. And so anyhow, people did it, though. They continued to purchase gold and silver coins right through all the supply shortages and everything. And that set the stage for the big increase in precious metals prices in 2010, 2011. Well, we're seeing similar circumstances right now where you've got to wait a long time if you want silver coins, and you have to pay a big premium. And so the actual price of silver, if you want to buy physical and have it in hand in a short time, is much higher than the current stated spot price. So that's a sign that people are willing to pay up to get physical silver in hand right away. And that's a sign that demand won't go away in the short run, because people who are lukewarm, you know, who might want to buy or might not, they're willing to wait. But people who are really, really adamant about getting precious metals right now, they're the guys who are willing to pay up. And that's what we're seeing right now, really motivated buyers in the precious metals markets. And that's usually a sign of good things to come.
And you said that all the gold that's ever been mined is still in the vaults, but some of it's in different vaults than it was in recent history. Like, let's say, Saddam's gold, that's in a different vault. Gaddafi's gold, that's in a different vault. Ukraine's gold, I think that's in a different vault as well. And now Germany, they thought theirs was in our vault, and they would have liked to had it back in their vault. And there seems to be some issues with that. So it seems like there's a little bit of a shell game going on with the gold and which vault it's actually in, and in which little shell the pea is actually under, isn't it?
That's actually a very good point, because a lot of the gold that was in Western central bank vaults has been flowing east in the last few years. It's been going to China and India and Russia. And those are very strong hands. They're not buying gold in the hopes of selling it for a 20% profit 2 years from now. They're putting it away with decades in mind of trying to manage a stable currency. And possibly, who knows, backing their currency with precious metals at some point in the not too distant future. And so to the extent that China and India and Russia are cleaning out the vaults of the Western central banks, we may at some point hit the level where the central banks just don't feel like they can sell any more of their gold to China, you know, and so they stop selling. And if China wants to continue to buy, then they're going to have to pay up. They're going to have to find other sources of gold and pay whatever those sources demand. And so that's, again, that's another recipe for rising prices in the future. And we can't know whether that's this year or next year or 5 years from now. And we can't know whether it'll start at the current price or at $750 an ounce. You know, these are unknowable things, but the conditions are being created in which we get a really nice long reprise of the the 12-year bull market for gold and silver of the previous decade. And we just have to get down to the entry point, and we don't know where that is. And so the only solution for somebody who's interested in precious metals now is really to dollar cost average. Because you can't predict the year ahead price, whether it's going to go up or down. So just buy a little bit each month, buy the same amount each month. And then if the price goes down, you get more ounces for the amount of money that you're putting into it. And over time, if the price rises, you'll end up with a very favorable price. You won't have hit the very bottom and made, you know, the absolute most you could make, but you'll make money. And the longer it takes for that to work out, the more you will end up making, because you're continuing to buy a little each month, and you're buying more when prices are down and less when prices are up. So that's the only way to approach precious metals right now. You can't trade it, because precious metals, along with the rest of the financial system, are manipulated in various ways by governments. Even if they're not directly intervening in the precious metals markets, they're still intervening in the stock market and the bond market, and they're pushing short-term interest rates around, and all of that affects precious metals. And so we can't look at fundamentals again, you know, and make any kind of a determination about trading strategies. All we can do is look at the big picture, which is ever-increasing leverage, ever-increasing government control of the markets, and assume that it's going to blow up. And so bet regularly on the things that will survive and thrive in that kind of an environment, and you'll be okay eventually, you know?
And we talked about the secondary miners. What about the primary silver miners? Are they making money at $15?
A few of them, not very many though. Mostly this is at best break even for most of the big miners, and a lot of them are losing money. And the reason for that is that they basically got very cocky in the last bull market. There was a stretch of a few years where the market was rewarding miners for ounces in the ground, regardless of the economic viability of those ounces, because the market was assuming the price would go up enough to make even high-cost difficult to get at deposits viable and valuable in the future. Well, that led the miners to take on debt in order to buy and develop really high cost deposits. And so the cost structure of the industry is a mess right now. Although it's getting better, the last couple of years they've been able to lower their costs dramatically, but not to the point where it's a healthy industry. So they really need higher prices to become a vibrant, highly profitable industry again. So what you're doing if you buy a miner is you're betting on future cash flows, which are derived from higher prices. You're not betting on the company as currently structured thriving in the world as it's currently set up. And so some of these miners are cheap enough now where it's still a great deal to buy now in the expectation of silver going back up into the 20s or 30s or 40s or 50s. But you aren't going to see an immediate ramp up in profits because these guys are just not that profitable right now. And there's no prospect of them becoming profitable in silver until silver spikes. So, you know, I own some silver miners and I would consider owning more, but only the very best of breed and only at really, really good prices.
Hey, Preppers and Patriots, that's the end of the first half of my conversation with John Rubino of DollarCollapse.com. Come back next week and check out the rest of the show.
In the Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. A globalist conspiracy transpires by way of a false flag attack against America's energy infrastructure. Noah and Cassandra Parker witness a complete economic meltdown, which is intentionally triggered by the event. The assault is blamed on patriots and Christians who are rounded up into detention centers across the country. Noah and his friends must take action to prepare for the meltdown and defend against the totalitarian regime, which is gunning for their freedom and, quite possibly, their very lives. Get your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution for Kindle, paperback, or audio edition at Amazon.com today.